I'm reading from my book, which has been out just 3 weeks. It's called Riddance. And the occasion of me writing this book is that in 2006, on Valentine's Day, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had cancer. I had something called non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a blood cancer. And it's not operable. They have to give you chemotherapy to treat it. So I'm going to start by reading a few poems about that. This is a poem of direct address. Tumour. You gave me time to notice. Apple blossom, hand movements, the light taking leave of rooms. I would like to claim new attention to my children, but the truth is they grew up whether I watched them or not. Mostly I slept. You began in midsummer. It took till February to find you. By then, all I knew were symptoms. Insomnia, night sweats, a cough I could not shake off. Because of you, I revisited old LPs. I did not want to die not having fried onions to Grover, made bubbles to this mortal coil. The script writers of Frasier helped me recover from you, plus condensed milk and broccoli, though not at the same time. Eventually, I drank coffee again. You reacquainted me with my guilt, the way I glared at S after she'd poured out her heart in the autumn of endless nights with nothing but the wind for company. I chose songs having you and invented ceremonies by rivers, but I found no poetry in you. You saved me from talking about house prices. You obliterated my craving for alcohol. I would say I am grateful, but I'm not ready for that just yet. One of the things that I became very interested in while I was being treated and subsequently was the language that we use to describe illness and particularly cancer. And it's even happened in the last couple of days where usually a celebrity or some sports person will die or be ill and be reported on as having a battle with cancer or having lost the battle with cancer. And you've all heard this and I've heard it too, and I'd never thought about it until obviously I was in the middle of it. And let me reassure you that you do not feel like you are fighting the battle. You feel the battle is being done to you. I'm fighting. We are talking in a room across a table. You are waiting. I am fighting down a corridor in an armchair. You are reading in a ward across the bed where I am fighting. I am sleeping, imagining, dreaming, flying, running. I am fighting. I am walking, stretching, yawning on the sofa. You are crying. We are walking through a doorway. I am sitting. Now I'm lying. I am sleeping. You are sitting. We are waiting. I am fighting. Everything that you've heard about chemotherapy is true. And beyond that as well. But one thing I will say for chemotherapy, it is fantastic for warts. I had a wart right there on my finger, and it's not there now. I was told yesterday, actually, by a medical friend of mine, who's not nothing to do with my treatment, a medical friend, that the regime I had is called R-CHOP. That's the name of the thing I was given. That stands for the initials of each chemical that I was given. And I mean, I knew that when I was being treated, but what she told me is that R-CHOP is one of the worst things you can possibly, it's one of the worst on the worst list, you know. I didn't know that till yesterday. Wart. You're not much fun, are you, wart? You sit there on my finger hinge proudly. Announcements aren't your style. Rather, you insinuate. Fattening stealthily. Little Uluru, time bomb, capsule from another planet. You glare up at me, a word made flesh. I live in a very wet part of the world, which is Devon. And I'm the only person in Devon who cannot surf. But I like doing this. I believe it's important to do things you're no good at. My first wave. Pulsing green and aquamarine below the surface. The breakers rear, roar, and paff you. You paddle out and bob, expectant. Far out they start, charcoal, invisible, then tower, cappuccino, which flip you as you turn. Resurfacing, salt gulps into the cave of you under the tongue. You might catch four in an hour or none. Walking back, you grow shadow again, lither, slinky, glistening, feeling half your weight, grinning longer than you're bored. And a 10-year-old whizzes by on foam the size of a house. This is another wet poem. It's a beautiful part of Exeter, where I live, where you can just walk out or cycle out of, basically out of the city, as far as you like, and you end up at water in this marvellous estuary, which is very wide and very flat. It's a bit like Suffolk, but it is Devon. And on one side you have water, and on the other side just these very damp fields with ditches and cows and streams. Everything's just oozing and wet. And there's an odd word in this poem, which is the word kledge, and all that means is fibrousy, wet clay. And also a reference to a pub called the Turf, a turf hotel, which sits on this spit of land which juts out into this marvellous estuary. Borderline. These are the flatlands, stitched between floodplain and ditch. Everything provisional, ooze and soos. The estuary looks walkable. Spines of red clay rising from slate water, with flanks of weeping slip, which shimmer, mother of pearl, silver, molten. A powerboat that was toy bounces through its roar, its wake slapping the kledge, scattering wagtails. The stranded barge of the turf breathes easy, its spur both tongue and poop deck. Beyond, a train becomes its horn, skeletal willows inch greener, and an oarsman pushes himself backwards into the future. So I'm going to finish with this one. This is, I began speaking about light leaving the room, and this is, as it were, towards the other end of the book, where light reappears again in a different manifestation. Visitation. Imagine walking for a year down a tunnel. The exit, a tale you hear rumours of. The survivors, few, but ecstatic. Their story, not yours, in the papers. Now imagine the darkness thickening, a cataract on your eyes like lichen. Then suddenly finding yourself blinded. The fault line in a cloud breaking open, the feet of its column standing where you stand, within its hologram of light. Thank you so much.